Hello, welcome. This is Between Two Worlds. I'm sorry that we have been gone for so long.
Wow.
We have been gone for just over a month now. Our last one, I think, was the end of April, April 27th, April 26th, and we are now back.
We are back with a vengeance. We were not on vacation, by the way, just in case anyone is wondering.
You were definitely on vacation.
That's right. I was on the vacation.
You were on vacation.
Totally right. I messed up with it. That's right. It's been too long.
Yeah. Ron was on vacation. I was out working, doing conferences.
Yep. You've been gone too.
Not on vacation though.
No, I was on vacation.
You're on vacation.
Palm Springs.
Who knows where Danny was on vacation?
Yes, he was.
Gitch was, I don't know where Gitch was.
He is on vacation too.
And Annalie.
And she was on vacation.
She was on vacation.
Yes, she
was.
Went
on a road trip. She can't even defend herself.
So I retract that. Yes, we were gone because we were on vacation.
But let's have it stand that I was the only one who was not on vacation.
Yes. So why was this not working?
It's hard to do a podcast and a host and do everything.
Can you have two voices? Hey, Luke, what do you... Hey, I think it should be... No. Not going to work?
No, I don't think that's going to work.
Okay.
So I mean, Gitch could probably do that by
Gitch
himself.
Gitch could do it. He could have a conversation with himself.
I think Gitch would like to talk to himself.
He'd win an argument. Maybe.
But yeah, so as you've heard, there's actually nobody else in this room except for myself and Ron.
I know. This is just like the old times.
It was never just you and me.
Back in the home, it was.
Back in our house, it was never just you and me.
Oh, that's right, too.
There's three other children and a wife.
That's right. Well, it's a little bit like the old times, maybe.
But we haven't forgotten our ways, and we are going to talk about, here's the thing. So I'm not on it. Gitch isn't on it. Annalie's not on it. Dan's not on it.
Nope.
It's Ron. Ron, you're up with here's the thing.
Oh, man. Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. Here's the thing. This has actually been brewing in my soul for a long, long time.
Over 5 weeks or just the past 5 weeks?
Oh, no. This is for years. Probably since the very first time I opened up a clothes dryer and cleaned the screen, the filter, call it whatever you want. And then there's this stuff on there. Like, where does this stuff come from? It's called lint. And I thought, well, that's what I was learning how to do wash. And so washer, dryer, before the dryer goes, you clean out that screen or that filter. There's lint on there. Why is there lint on there? Like, I didn't put lint in the dryer. So why is there lint in there? You know, those clothes are clean, but the filter is dirty. That makes no sense to me. And then after years of purchasing clothes and seeing clothes wear out, I wash clothes, I dry clothes, I wear out clothes, I buy new clothes. And that cycle repeats itself, Luke. You'll know this down the road. And I think there is a conspiracy out there among clothes manufacturers and dryer manufacturers that they've gotten together. Hey, let's build an empire. You make clothes dryers, I make clothes, but we don't want clothes to last. So we'll make people wash them. And then while they wash them, they're going to put them in this dryer and this lint is going to form. And you know, how long does it take before the lint actually, if you saved all the lint and re-sewed it and made it into fabric again, is that possible? Because I have no idea where lint comes from other than clothes. So where is that lint coming from? On a pair of pants, on a shirt. Why is lint come off? Why is lint actually there? I don't know. But I'm tired of this. I'm thinking I have bought clothes. I have paid my dues buying clothes. And now I'm refusing to wash my clothes. That's it. I'm no longer.
You can wash your clothes. Just hang dry them.
That's true. I have started hang drying clothes. It's not quite the same. In fact, I used to do that when I was in Saskatchewan. And you hang wet clothes and when it's 25 below, and that's not good. They're frozen. They're frozen clothes. So there's freezing clothes on the frozen wash, you know, and so it's not working. But we did, you know, and then you'd have to thaw them out, you know, and then you had, you know, and then they're still wet and then that ain't working. So
how did you wash clothes then?
Well, you just washed them and then you dried them actually inside.
How do you dry? You just hang, hopefully the house is warm enough?
Yep, hopefully the house is warm enough and you just hang them all over the place.
Wow.
We had a dryer, but we were too cheap to use it.
Really?
Yep.
When you were a child?
What we used our dryer for was to store food because it was cooler in the dryer. And so we would actually store food in our dryer. That's true. That is very true.
Did you know the dryer was used to drying clothes?
Not at our house, it wasn't.
But did
you? That was a discovery I made when I went to college.
Actually, though?
Driver. Oh, the dryer's
this not This isn't in the fridge?
It is not an extra fridge. No. No, seriously. That's where my mom would keep a good stash of cookies. We're in the dryer. And, oh, man, it's nice and cool in there.
Oh, man. I heard it. Speaking of cookies.
Yes.
I heard a story of, I forget who told me this, but they would buy a cow. Like a
cow?
A cow and like eat it like that. Like they'd buy a whole cow, butcher it, and put it in. And then she'd have one box called cow tongues.
Ooh.
And none of the kids would ever open that because they don't want to look at cow tongues.
Yep.
They found out years later that in that cow's tongues box was cookies and treats. And the mom disguised it.
Cow tongue.
Cow tongue. So it'd be wrapped in brown paper. They're like, oh, there's probably cow tongue in that brown paper because it says cow tongues.
See that? Like, who would ever think of opening up a box of cow tongues? NBA. Who would ever think of opening up a dryer and finding treasures?
Exactly.
And sweet. And oh, yeah. See, moms. Yeah. Moms got it figured out.
But, Ron, I think you're onto something with this not drying stuff.
I know. I think we could shut down Maytag. We could shut down the big boys. Maytag,
is that
you're
that
done.
Big, I don't know. Is that a drying company?
They make stuff. It's not worth anything anymore, but...
What?
I don't like Maytag, in case anybody was wondering.
I don't know what that is.
Maytag, they make appliances. Maytag fridges. Have you never bought a fridge?
I bought one fridge and some mini fridge.
And it's a mini fridge. It's obviously... Maytag doesn't make mini fridges. I don't
you
even
have
know.
Samsung stuff.
We have some. Oh yeah, don't go there with Samsung either. But Maytag, we had Maytag dishwashers. They're good, but Maytag, we haven't had fun with Maytag dryers. I don't think. Samsung. Oh no, we don't.
You
go
broke
there.
A dryer.
Oh no, I broke a washer. I broke a washer. Sent it down a flight of stairs. That was not a happy time. That's for another day.
Oh, but it's good to be back. Thanks, Ron, for Here's the Thing.
Oh, yeah.
Just a little update about what we've been doing here at the Abbotsford campus is we've actually had a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We have had a grad retreat.
Yes.
We've had our last core groups of the year. We've had our last real live nights of the year.
Mm-hmm.
We've done service projects. We've done a bunch of stuff.
Grad blessing dinner.
Grad blessing dinner.
Yeah. Grade 12s, yeah.
Yeah. Bible study is now just wrapping up.
Yeah. It's June.
Huge.
That's why.
People are getting ramped up for day camps.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of stuff going on. So I don't really know where to even pinpoint.
Well, anything. We got our, this week we have...
Grad takeover. So the high school grads are taking over for the night. So
yep.
Ethan and Trevor are speaking. Sid, Sierra, Nicola, Alexa, I think they're running some games or something like that.
Nice.
And... Faye Lauer and Nick Potter doing announcements.
Faye Lauer and Potter do announcements. Nice.
Oh, yeah. And McKenna's leading worship. So it should be good. Should be a good night. We're excited. But what we want to talk about is something that might be a mystery to most people. Something that might be... People have wondered for years this question.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably one of the age-old questions that parents have been asking for years,
mm-hmm.
and they can't quite put themselves into their kids' shoes because it was too long ago for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to just figure out and see what does their teenager thinking of about when they make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
When teenagers make decisions, what the heck is going on?
Wow.
This is a lifelong, this is an age-old question. What are teenagers thinking when they make decisions?
So how do you make a good decision? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So, but I mean,
what's
teenagers...
What's the process?
Yeah. What's the process teenagers should make? How can parents come by it? And like how... And in contrast with how to make a good decision, like how are teenagers making decisions now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you look at, I mean, you open up the, you know, the first couple of pages of the Bible, and it doesn't take you long until, you know, we find somebody, two people in particular, that made wrong decisions. You know, obviously they were influenced, obviously they were tempted, and, you know, was God there? Yes. You know, and so I think in our world as parents, you know, we raise our kids to hopefully make good decisions. There's a training ground that happens from the moment they're born, and as they grow and as they mature, their decision-making ability tends to grow with that. You know, so, you know, from what they eat, you know, when they're younger, you know, parents feed them all this baby food stuff, you know, because kids don't know, but they make all those decisions for them until they actually get to an age and they start making their own decisions. So, you know, even parents early on make their, they choose their own, they choose their kids as friends, you know, playtimes, all those kind of things. And then all of a sudden adolescence hits. And what happens is that, and parents know this, is that adolescence hits and teenagers don't need their parents as much. There's a there's a point in time where they start to distance themselves. They want to make decisions on their own. They we've talked about this in the past. They don't, it's called autonomy. You know, they want to be independent thinkers. You know, they don't want their parents to make all the decisions for them. You know, and there's some big decisions that parents still obviously will help them in. But, you know, that day-to-day stuff is sometimes hard. You know, they go to school. If they're, you know, going to a public school, private school, if they're homeschooled, obviously that's not going to happen. But, you know, when they're with friends and parents aren't around, what goes into making a good decision? And what are the factors in making good decisions? I grew up in a home where, you know, there was always a threat of, you know, oh, don't do that because, boy, you're going to get it, you know. And, you know, the if you made a bad decision in front of your sibling and the tattletale sisters would tell mom and dad that you did this and this and this, you know. I remember, you know, we were, I think, 14, probably 13 or 14, and my parents were gone and we lived on a farm. And there was a highway that ran right by our house. And we had this pickup truck. And, of course, every 13 or 14-year-old boy wants to drive on the highway and squeal the tires. And there's just something very, it's a lot of testosterone, I think, that happens in this thing. But boys want to drive fast and they want to squeal those tires. So we actually changed the tires on the truck and put on some bald tires. Mm. And so they would spin faster. And so then we would just, you know, mom and dad were gone. And so I think a buddy of mine was over. And so we would go onto the highway, wait for it all to clear, you know, so nobody's coming. And then we would gun that. We'd smoke those tires and squeal. And they'd squeal like a pig, you know. It was just awesome. And so we do that back and forth, back and forth. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's done. We know, you know, we've heated up the truck fairly much. And so we wanted to make sure it cooled down in time for my dad to get home so he wouldn't look at a truck. Why is that truck so hot, you know? Well, wouldn't you know it, we think we've gotten away from it. And there were, my sisters weren't home, so that was, we were safe. But my neighbor saw this, and she called my mother and says, why were you driving up and down the highway so much last night? Like, up and down, up and down. And so we get home from school the next day, and there's my dad, there's my mom. Says, so, Ronnie, what did you do last night? Oh, just hung, blah, 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 you know, not admitting anything. And then, well, the neighbor called and said that there was a lot of action in and out of our driveway, up and down the highway. And I go, busted. Bad decision. Bad decision. So everybody makes those decisions, you know, whether they can be, you know, and that could have been, you know, somewhat dangerous. You know, you're 13, 14 driving on a highway with cars and trucks and all that. But you're a farm boy, you kind of get away with it. So that's the same thing as, you know, you walk into school and somebody says, hey, have you ever tried smoking? You know, what do you do then? You know, how do kids make that decision if they've never been offered a cigarette before? Some dope, some alcohol. They're at a party that as a parent, you assumed or you thought for sure there's no alcohol. And all of a sudden there's alcohol. And so how do you make that decision? You know? And so all of a sudden your teenager is put into a position that I must choose. And where do we go? And what's our wherewithal and all of that? So how do you make good decisions? You know, and I think that's, and as a parent, you know, have we prepped our kids enough for this? Because we can't watch them. And, you know, we talked about this, remember, about helicopter parenting, you know, all that kind of thing. Like, we just can't be there every minute, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about, as you were talking about this, and so you would have basically somewhat at least learned something from your bad decision. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, and you weren't doing something that was that stupid that you probably could have died. Like, I mean, it's dumb, but it's not like it wasn't completely outrageous, unheard of what you guys were doing. Right. And I was thinking, I'm like, would teenagers nowadays do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, no, I don't think they would.
No.
Do you think teenagers are making bad decisions because they don't know how to make any decision, and because they're losing their autonomous, they're not becoming autonomous people?
Okay.
That they are staying at home, staying with their parents, mm-hmm. not venturing out there, so they never actually have to make these decisions. So when these decisions that they'd have to make when they're in high school, and now when they graduate, they have to make these decisions now that they actually don't know how because they never practiced any of these things before. So do you think a cause for helping kids make decisions is giving them a chance to fail, fall down? Like if for instance, if you're teaching me how to ride my bike, how did you teach me?
Well, that's a good illustration, because what we would do is we'd put you on the bike.
Yeah.
And
training
wheels first. And so you would, you know, and you would be safe because you could lean one way to the other and you wouldn't fall.
Yeah.
You'd lean a little bit and then you'd kind of catch you off guard.
And then by grade.
And then, well, depending on how much you wanted to learn, we'd take one training wheel off. So if you took the right one off, you learn to, because we'd tell you, learn to balance, you know, because the training wheels are a little off. You know, if the bike is straight up and down, they're not touching.
Right.
It's just if it leans a little bit that you get
it. It's like a gutter ball or gutter guards in bowling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we take one off, and then you learn to balance a little bit, so you go a little bit farther, and then all of a sudden you realize, are you ready? So, but what I would do is, because it was important for you to know that I was there. The training wheels were good. I didn't have to be there. But the moment I took off both training wheels, you were nervous. Like, okay, now what? So I would hold the seat behind you and say, okay. And I would run and you would pedal and keep you straight and balanced. And then slowly
you'd let go.
I'd let go.
Yeah.
And I would still run beside you. You would almost think that I'm still holding you. And if you would waver a little bit, I might grab the seat a little bit and set you straight. But eventually, I mean, I'd be tired. And
I mean, you can't. That's hard, a lot of work to keep up with the bike.
Exactly. And so then all of a sudden you're there and boom, you're gone. And the more you do it, the better you get.
Mm-hmm.
And so did you fall? Sure you did.
Yeah, I remember falling lots.
Yep.
But I was just thinking about that as how parents, like I think parents were really good as the child is younger, training wheel, safety, like we kind of let them go off there on their
helmets.
They're safe. But then as soon as they start to get older and it's like, okay, it's time to take off the training wheels and we're holding on to the back seat, I think parents have a tough time actually letting go of that back seat.
Yeah.
That the kid is going to think their whole high school life that they did all of this by themselves. Then the parent has to let go because they're going way too fast for them to hold on anymore.
Yep.
The kid's going to be gone and then just make the worst decisions because the parent never did let go.
Yeah.
And so I see that in these kids' lives is that they understand that the parent is holding on and that they can act reckless because of that, because they know their parent's there.
Yep.
And so in their decision-making, they have this unrealistic safety net that's not in real life.
Yeah.
Is that no matter what's going to happen, my parents will clean this up.
And I think there's a lot of fear there on both sides. See, I grew up in many ways with fear-based parenting.
Right.
you mess up, you're in big trouble. You know, the wrath of my dad.
The belt, the spoon, the
whatever is handy. You know, and so you learn to maneuver around a lot of that stuff. You became very good at lying. You became very good at covering up and all those kinds of things because, hey, what they don't know won't hurt them type thing. Well, wrong way to parent, you know. You need to have a relationship. Mm-hmm. There needs to be an opportunity for you as a teenager to say, yep, you know what, Mom, Dad, I got invited to this party. Is there alcohol? Don't know. Yes or no? Well, okay, maybe there will be. Are you going to drink? Well, boom, that's a question now that we're going to talk about. What about, you know, I want a date, you know, okay, you know, there's a special girl, there's a special guy. Okay, what are the decisions around making good choices when you're with a girl or with a boy, boyfriend, girlfriend, all those kind of things? Who schools you? Who initiates some of those decisions and discussions? And that's where relationship comes in. Are you talking about making these decisions? It's kind of like when you get your driver's license. And one of the things that I did when I first got my driver's license, I mean, I'd driven on a farm. I knew how to drive when I was, you know, 10, 11 years old. So when I finally got my driver's license, you know, I wanted the car. My dad wouldn't give it to me. I go, what do you mean? No, you're not getting the car. It's not yours. And so I made a rule, and I don't know if you remember this. The moment you got your N, I let you go. Go someplace. Go tell a friend or go to the store or whatever.
I don't remember this. I think I went to school.
Okay, whatever. But you got to drive immediately after.
Yes.
I said, you bet. You are not waiting for special permission. Mm-hmm. You know, I want you to learn, you know, I mean, it was in the safety zone. I mean, I wanted you to go immediately so that you could go away and come back home without me sitting beside you. Mm-hmm. That's what I want. I wanted you to feel comfortable saying, I just made it to my friend's place. I made it to school and back, and my dad isn't there. He's not the co-pilot anymore type thing, you know? So I think parents need to build that relationship with them and ease them into this decision. Don't start off with big decisions. Start off with the small ones, you know? And however, ask them in terms of, okay, how things are going in school relationally. I mean, there's social decisions. There's sexual decisions, you know, on terms of how do I handle, you know, what about if somebody says, hey, have you seen this? And opens up their phone and it's pornography. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, no, I don't want to see that. So what happens, you know? And as a parent, I want to say, hey, when their friend shows you pornography, what are you going to say? Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing. Or, you know, even spiritual decisions. What's good for you spiritually as a mom or dad? You know, wanting your kids to make good decisions spiritually. So are you going to get messed up in gossip? Are you going to get messed up in lying? You know, all of those things. There's things that need to happen because you will fall. You will make mistakes. And we want to be there in a relational value with you.
Yeah.
And I think that's important, you know, that there is something there. But there has to be, in many ways, a foundation first. Mm-hmm. And that foundation has to be rock solid. It's no wonder that Jesus, in the Sermon on the Mount, he closes the Sermon on the Mount with building your house on a solid foundation. It's either going to be build it on the sand or build it on the rock. Because it's not whether or not if storms come, storms will come. Yeah. And what's going to last? You know, and that's powerful, you know. And I'm reminded of this in a... I read this in a book here a little while ago. Jesus called and he wants his church back by Ray Johnson. And Ray Johnson gives this illustration of the Golden Gate Bridge. I've been on the Golden Gate Bridge a couple times. It's an incredible spectacle of engineering. I mean, it's amazing. This thing was built in the 30s, I believe, and it's over a very turbulent channel. I mean, it is a horrible piece of water that you know, they had to navigate with boats. Was tough. They said, let's build a bridge. And so in order to do this, they had to go down into the bedrock. And well, there is a fault, an earthquake fault that is right there. And so they have to go below that. And they had in the 30s had to send divers down and they had to blow it up so that they could sink those piles deep, 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 deep. Now, and then of course, they built this bridge. It took them years and years and years, and it's an amazing, you know, architectural type deal. But the foundation doesn't move. the top moves. It sways. I mean, 20 to 30 feet, it can sway, that top of that bridge. And you'd think, oh my goodness, this is crazy. But it's swaying, but it's only swaying on top of a solid foundation. You know, and I think we have to recognize that if the foundation is good, they're going to get hit with the wind and the waves and all of that. And that you can sway, but you got to be in a foundation. Mm. You know, and that's the beauty of knowing who God is and being a parent that wants to instill biblical principles into their lives. Because yeah. we will have opportunities to walk alongside our kids when they do fail, when they do make a bad decision. You know, because the crowd can influence him, circumstances. Oh, but you don't get it. You know, I was, you know, I didn't want to do this, but it was just that I wasn't thinking, you know, that's right. Because their brains haven't developed. They don't understand. Like even when I took my dad's truck on the highway and burned those tires off left, right and center, all that kind of stuff. I wasn't thinking about consequences. I was having fun, you know. And I think teenagers don't understand consequences. Mm. They don't. And those are the things that we have to help them understand is consequences.
Yeah.
And so I think in that realm, I think as a parent, foundation, what does God's word say? What do we want? You can't run their lives for them. They make these decisions more and more and more. They do want to become autonomous. They do want that independence. We have to give them and the statistics are telling us that if you hover and if you overbear on your kids, the chances of them making poor decisions are even greater. So that's why we have to bring this into a step back, mom and dad. Let's let them figure this out and help them along the way.
That's good. That's good stuff. Well, Ron, thanks for sharing today.
Well, great. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you showed up.
I am so glad. I'd rather be on holidays.
Of course you would.
Yep.
Anyways, that's it for today. Hope you enjoyed. If you have any questions, feel free to email us. And that's everything. Catch you guys next week.